Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. A long while back, I did a podcast, podcast number 70 to be specific, about doing a detailed but brief neurological exam and included some aspects and talking a little bit about hints at that time. And I did that mainly because people were asking me how I could do such an assessment and how to do so both quickly and accurately. And that since expanded to where I was on the Foam Frat podcast and talked about it there. But also, I did quite a talk at WMSA, the Wisconsin Emergency Medical Services Association's meeting, and I am so glad that I was able to participate in that. And what I did was I expanded on what was a really short podcast talking about very specifically just kind of a quick neurological exam, and I have a video of where I'm doing it in about 2 minutes. And I didn't really talk about it much more on the website past that point, but I've gotten lots of feedback. People loved the exam and they wanted to know more about it. At that time, I didn't have a name for it, but since then, I have been working on things a little bit more, and I wanted to kind of double back and talk about this a little bit more. So I came up with a name finally after talking to some people, and we kind of, you know, basically brainstormed a little bit. And what I decided to call it was the Brief Repeatable Assessment in Neurology, or the Brain Exam. I know everyone has to have a fancy, catchy name, but mine, I feel like, really hits all the points. It's meant to be brief. It takes about 2 minutes in a negative exam, basically, when everything's normal on it. It's repeatable. It's meant to be something that anyone can pick up and do so easily. And it's an assessment in neurology. Notice it's not talking about stroke specifically or traumatic brain injuries or looking only for cerebellar strokes or large vessel occlusions or any of that kind of stuff. It is meant to be just a general assessment of the neurological portions of our clinical exam. And why do we need to have something that's broad like this? Well, you know, we talk about stroke-related exams. The big one that comes to mind is like the Cincinnati Stroke Scale or the National Institute of Health Stroke Scale, the NIHSS. Both of those are useful for kind of different populations. The Cincinnati Stroke Scale or the FAST, you know, those are exams that are decently sensitive. They don't catch like the cerebellars and stuff like that, but they're easy to teach people. I can spend just a few minutes and explain to a layperson how to do that exam quickly versus the NIH stroke scale, which goes into a lot more detail. You need additional resources. You know, you want to have them looking at pictures and reading things off and stuff like that. But it also takes a lot of time. Even if you're pretty talented, have it memorized, can go through all the steps, it's not something that you can quickly do, you know, truly in a couple of minutes' time. So there needs to be something in between. And that's where I came up with the brain exam. And the brain exam is something that bases itself off of a bunch of findings that we already do. You know, we're already assessing the cranial nerves. We're already talking to the people to assess their cognitive functions. We're already doing a cerebellar exam, or at least we should be. A lot of people skip out on the cerebellar exam for different reasons, and most of them are not very good reasons. Sometimes you can skip the cerebellar exam, but I just think that really, most of the time we should be doing it just like we do any other portion of the exam. And so what I wanted to do was have something that I can share with people to say, hey, this is what I do. Keep in mind, I haven't validated that yet, and more to come on that in a few minutes. But what I wanted to do was share that. And again, people loved it and it worked really well. And it's something that's pretty straightforward, very intuitive, and was something that I thought, hey, we should talk about it. So that's what podcast number 70 was all about. But what was roughly 10 to 12 minute podcast there was expanded to a 90 minute talk at WMSA. But I talked about a lot of things in a lot more detail, given we broke down the different parts of the neurological exam. That was a big portion of it. But I also talked about a lot about the caveats. But I didn't really talk about that in the old podcast. So what this podcast is more about is talking a little bit more on those caveats, the things you have to keep in the back of your mind, and also the things you need to better document with this. So now that we talked about that the brain exam, it's meant to be quick, it's meant to be something that is kind of broad in nature to help us just basically catch, hey, this person needs a more detailed assessment. maybe not always I'm worried about specifically a stroke or I'm worried about a traumatic bleed or something like that. It's just something's not right here and we need to look at it further. And this is so that patients don't get missed early on, and especially in the pre-hospital environment. You know, you have this patient out in the field, you see them, you say, oh, you know, there's something kind of iffy on them, or maybe you don't really say anything at all, so you don't activate a stroke alert, when really, if you had done this assessment, you've been like, holy crap, something's wrong, we need to do something to correct this. If you had had that chance to do the brain exam, then it helps trigger that we should probably be notifying the hospital we're going to that we have some abnormal findings and it needs to be followed up on. Furthermore, it's something that's very reproducible. We can show people what we did, just like the NIH stroke scale is very much meant to be part of the reproducibility thing. However, there's some subjectivity to the exam and stuff like that we really don't have to cover at this point. But we've covered it before in other portions of the podcast, including on the Foam Frat podcast. I know we specifically mentioned it there. Just like the sensitivity and specificity of the Cincinnati stroke scale is not the finest either. It was meant for lay people, truly, versus well-qualified and trained healthcare professionals. So what does that mean for the brain exam? Again, this is meant more to be a flag. You see this, you know something more needs to be done. As far as what exactly that all incorporates depends on the clinical context, and that's the thing I really like about it. You still have to use, no pun intended, your own brain to know what to do with the brain exam findings. But it can help us detail that, hey, I see something wrong when I assess this patient, I need to do the next part. And the neat thing is you can do this no matter what setting. I mentioned pre-hospital already, but obviously you can do this in the ED, you can do it in the clinic settings. It doesn't matter where you are. This exam does not require anything special except for you to know how to do it. But like I said, there's certain limitations to this exam. Obviously the big part is how you can assess the patient. So, for example, let's talk about the pediatric patients. Well, kids, obviously, depending on their age and their abilities, they may not be able to do portions of the exam, but we can kind of use some caveats. For example, if I am looking at extraocular movements, well, I probably can't have them follow my finger with just their eyes, but what I can use is have a light and flash it from side to side, up and down, and make them track it a little bit that way. Still doing the same thing, just a little differently. Cognition and their baseline neurological status can always be a little bit tricky. So asking parents, friends, family, you know, anyone who is familiar with this patient, hey, how are they acting? Is this how they usually act? And if they say no, well, what's different? Is it, well, Johnny's a little fussy, or is it that, hey, you know, I haven't noticed him move his right arm for the last few minutes? Okay, those are things we need to know about, and then we can test at it or look at it further. Same thing we run into with elderly patients. We need to know what the baseline status is. For example, they may be using a walker, so testing for ambulation may be a little more difficult, but if they can't do their baseline, so if they normally walk around without difficulty, and now they need a two-person assist to the stretcher, that's a big difference. We need to know that versus that two-person assist and they stay a two-person assist and family says that they're having to do just as much as they normally do. Okay, that's an abnormal finding in a sense, but that is their baseline. So we want to make sure that when we document and notify the people down the line who are taking care of this patient that, hey, this is their baseline finding according to family or whoever. We want to make sure that we know that. The same goes for cognition, everything else. If chronically they're only oriented to themselves, we should know that. If they are oriented times three normally, but now they're oriented only to themselves, we need to know that too. The other kind of special population I think that we forget about so easily are the injured. You know, when grandma falls and she has a hip fracture, I'm not going to be able to assess her gait really. I'm not going to be able to do some of the other kind of heel to shin movements and stuff like that on the affected side. So maybe I need to do pronator drift and maybe I can use something else like rapid alternating movements with their palms, you know, something to try and help associate that. And then just explain like, hey, I couldn't do a complete exam. Those patients, by the way, those patients where there are limitations, I'm going to be much more likely to further assess them with, say, like CT, MRI, whatever needs to happen. But I'm also going to make sure to understand that a negative exam may truly be a negative if everything else is okay on the assessment. They may still need to be observed for a while. They may need a special consult, but at least I'm a little less worried if everything else looks good compared to that patient who I was able to do an exam without any limitations on the actual exam itself, but they had abnormal findings such as they couldn't complete the cerebral exam because of the vertigo and because they couldn't do a heel to shin properly, the finger, nose, finger, pronator drift, whatever. Those are key differences I want to make sure to spell out and explain. So what does that mean for us when we see these people? Well, we just want to make sure that when we have these limitations that we know about it and we talk about it. We make sure we talk about it to the other treating healthcare providers. We need to make sure we talk about it as well to the documentation and charting side of things. You know, we just need to make sure that we have covered our basis. And that's something that I think was a little confused and a little missed at WIMSA, which is why I want to discuss it more here. But again, this is a pretty straightforward exam. And I think Tyler Cristofoli on the foam fret side, I think he's going to publish the full 90-minute talk. I'm not exactly sure, but I know that we tried to record as many of those talks as possible. So you want to check that out as well. But right now, listening to this, I hope between the last podcast and this podcast, you can understand a little bit more. Now, for those who either were at WIMSA or listening to this, whatever, I am trying to find a way to validate this. And it's been a while since I've done original research, especially for something like this. I want to do it, and I've talked with some brilliant people already. But I think one thing I'm going to need some help with is agencies who are willing to become involved with the study and people who have done similar or maybe in some ways the same research and are willing to help out on that side. Because I know this is going to take a lot of work, but I think the brain exam could be something that could help revolutionize how we do neurological assessments. Again, I like the 9-stroke scale because it's something that's uniform and it's something well known. But there are significant limitations, especially when trying to incorporate it in environments where it's not easy to do, such as the pre-hospital environment. But I also am not a big fan of oversimplified ones that miss important types of strokes, such as the Cincinnati Stroke Scale. And both of those are focused on strokes. There's not really good neurological exams that we can use when we're talking about traumatic injuries or other types of neurological deficits. So I want this to be something broad, and that's why I like the brain exam. So if you are interested in helping in some form or fashion, please let me know. I would love to talk to you guys more, and especially if you think that your agency would be interested in incorporating this, I want to try to cross the spectrum and basically just do like a pilot study and then a validation and stuff like that. You know, the way we normally do all this, but I need assistance along the way to make that happen. So if you're listening, you're interested, please reach out to me. You can do that at thetotalem@gmail.com, which is our email. You can also contact us through the website. You can comment on the actual page itself. Whatever way, I'm not picky. I just want to know who is interested and how they think they can help. As I work on this more, I'll keep this updated. This is, again, something that can be pretty straightforward and I think can really revolutionize the way we do neurological assessments. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.